Good Monday evening to you all, and welcome to FM 98.5 CKWR's presentation entitled The School of Bishop Sheen. On this week's broadcast, Bishop Sheen will be talking about women, and he'll be talking about women in two different lights. The first reflection is entitled Women as Objects, Not Persons. And I think we see that very much in society today. And then he'll follow that up with one of his catechism lessons, and we're on lesson number 48 of a 50-part series, and the lesson is on the Mother of Jesus. And so I encourage each and every one of you now to sit back and relax and enjoy one of the greatest communicators of our time, the Venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen.
That refreshes. Since this talk is to be on woman, and is she an it, let me tell you the oldest story that has ever been told about women. It goes back to Adam and Eve. It was after the fall. And Adam was out walking with his two boys, Cain and Abel. And they looked into the wreck and ruin of the once beautiful garden of paradise. And Adam pulled the boys to himself and said, "Boys, that's where your mother ate us out of house and home." Stories are generally hard on women for some reason or other. I heard of a man and his wife who were out riding in Sunday traffic. The husband was driving, and the car cut perilously in front of them, went on ahead, but at the next stoplight, he caught up to it. And on the way, he said to his wife, "Stupid woman driver." And she said, "That wasn't a woman. That was a man that was driving." He said, "I know, but I bet his mother taught him." One does not find in great literature a fine portrayal of women. Some of the Russian novelists came close, Tolstoy. In our contemporary literature, women are just female zombies, hardly anything more. And of course, women note that there's a great decline in respect shown toward them. Men no longer take off their hats in elevators. In New York, there was a man who got up the other day in the subway, really and truly, and gave a seat to a woman, and she fainted. Just as she was falling, she said to him, "Thanks," and he fainted. And I wonder if there's anything in all the world, that makes God women into more respect, disrespect, than driving a convertible with her hair full of curlers. One wonders. Well, is it true that they are losing respect and dignity? We will see. But in order to understand it, we must make a distinction. We always have to begin with a distinction because we're supposed to be thinkers and philosophers. One makes a distinction always between a person and a function. A person is someone with whom one is in communion and closeness of heart. A function, there's only association, like walking in a factory. Because in a factory, you see, for example, in this studio, here we have various machines round about us. And each one of those parts has a function. And because it has only a function, it is just an it. Nothing more. One deals with a person through anecdotes. The Bible is anecdotal. Great Greek writer Homer is anecdotal. Simply because we exchange experiences of life. When we're dealing, however, with it or with individuals, there is less that communion. Because an individual is replaceable, a person is not. For example, when you go to a store and order a dozen oranges, you say, I don't like that orange, give me this one. Why? Because that's an individual, it's not a person. Nobody can replace your mother, your father, your husband, your wife, your children. But parts and machines can be replaced. They are it. Nothing else but it. And where is this distinction between a person and a function, or an it, better revealed than in the modern world, which is today divorcing love and sex? This is one of the most important divorces of our time. They are not supposed to be separated. Because sex is supposed to be the very highest expression of love. Today, however, they are divorced. And one has somewhat the same relationship as one does, and this explanation, between a person and a machine. Sex is replaceable. Anyone can supply. A person is not. A person is rooted in the heart, and if there is sex and relationship with that wife or with that husband, it is because of the strong love that exists between the two. This divorce has become so important that today sex is almost an intellectual thing. It used to be in more barbaric ages just purely physical, sometimes divorced from love, as in the rape of the Sabines. But today, it's intellectual in the sense that it's thought about. It's in the brain, it's not just in the glands. So that when a new model of an automobile is introduced, how is it introduced? Well, you have to have about 18 ballet dancers coming out and dancing on the stage, singing about the new model. It's got nothing to do with an automobile. Absolutely nothing. And so on the billboards, advertisements for cheese, for coffee, for crackers, for hair curlers, anything. What do they have to think about? One thing. It's on their mind. Advertisers can't think of anything else. Show a picture of a new model. There's some girl hanging over the hood. Maybe she goes with the car, but in any case, it's mental. It's possessing the modern mind. And one finds also another evidence of this. in pinups. I suppose, I do not know, I've never seen any statistics, but I'm sure that boys who put pin-up girls in their rooms probably have 30 or 40% of them might have the same girl supplied by a magazine. They are not interested, you see, in a person. So he can ride away for a pin-up. What is it? It's an itch. That's all. Is it Mary or Jane or anyone else? No. It's just that. It. So that in George Orwell's famous work, 1984, he speaks of the coming communist society in which a boy and a girl are conversing with one another and saying, do you love it? It. Functional. That's all. A replaceable part. Then one finds also the same thing. Girls do not have pin-ups, but they can go in ecstasies about, well, it used to be a uniform. Now, well, for a time being, tight pants and long hair. Don't let anybody tell you that we do not appreciate long-haired music today. We do. And see, what is loved is what? It's the general. It's not the particular. It's not the person. And since we replace parts in machines, hence the frequency of divorce, persons are just thrown aside almost with a brush of a hand. Now, what tends to make woman an it? Not that women make themselves it. It's because this civilization of ours has affected this divorce between a person and a function. And when a woman is a functionary or a man is a functionary, they're just it. That's all. Nothing else. Now, what is curious about this is that in an age where we so much stress sex, one finds that later on, when one makes an investigation about it, it doesn't play a very important role. For example, there was a survey made by a university in this country of two groups of women. One married women in the 30 age group, that is to say the early 30s, and another in those who were about 49. You see, that they never reached 50. They were just 49. And one of the questions that was asked was, what do you, as a woman, judge most important in your home? And the answer was the home, things. Some women said children. Is right, because a man marries to have a woman, but a woman marries to have children. But what was interesting was that they were the queen of things. That's why advertisers have to stress detergent, so you can take a dirty sock and put it inside of 20 gunny sacks and leave it in there for 2 seconds and look, white immaculate. What a great, big, wide, wonderful world we live in. And so they become interested in things. It was the home. See, it was not the husband. That's curious. Not the husband. Very few said that. When it was a person, it was children. But generally, things in the home. And then they were asked this question. What is the most important role of the husband? The answer was a provider. Provider. See how he became an it too? And many of the women, when asked about the job, said they didn't know exactly what he was doing, but he was a good provider. Made me think of something that I was reading in the work of a great European psychiatrist. He was saying, I was the economist, I was the psychiatrist, I was the doctor, I was the provider for my wife. And one night she said to me, when I was discussing a problem with her, then you really need me, don't you? And he said, then it came to me what marriage really was, that she was a person and I was a person. And so, with this overemphasis on the carnal, on the fragmented civilization in which we live, in which there's fission without any fusion, where there's been this emphasis on the eros, women are becoming it, and even husbands are becoming it. So one can trace the stages of the decline. The decline of love, that's what it is. In the first stage, I can tell him anything. He always understands. Second stage, I can't understand why you did that. The third and last stage, don't tell him. He wouldn't understand. It's the person that understands. So it becomes a life of it. Now, what is the answer to this? I've only given you really the cause and indicated a few symptoms of what is happening, namely the degeneration of a person as one made in the image and likeness of God. The answer to it is this. Here I'm only talking about women. It could just as well be about husbands. But the answer, as far as women is concerned, is this. Every woman was meant to be a mother. Either physically or spiritually. First of all, physical motherhood is easy to understand. Physical motherhood is the incarnation of a mutual love. All love ends in an incarnation. And this kind of motherhood, too, is one in which love never grows stale, because there's always a new veil that is lifted aside. First of all, is that of a wife, and then that of a mother, and an educator, a mother craft, and so forth. When they first meet, the young man and young woman, she is attracted by his power. Oh, you should see the end run he made Saturday afternoon. Power. And then she's the most beautiful girl in the world, and she uses cute baby talk. Then after a while, after a short time in marriage, then she asks him to put up the screens, and all the power is gone. What do you think I am, a Tarzan? And then finally the baby talk gets on his nerves. But then, there's love, real love, and all the power begins to appear in the boy, and all the beauty begins to appear in the girl. He begins to revive. And the youngsters, and she begins to revive in all of her beauty and cute baby talk in the little ones. And that's their love becomes a pilgrimage. It's a love of person, one for the other, husband and wife, finding its carnal expression here and there, but always irreplaceable. Because the first love that is a lasting and an eternal. Then there is spiritual motherhood. We must not think that there is any great priority of going to God through a husband and going to God through humanity. Spiritual motherhood is one in which there is no marriage, but there is a spending of the powers that might be utilized in a smaller group in a much larger group. No woman can see a limping dog or could see a rose overhanging a vase without her heart, mind, and soul going out to these things as if to prove that she was appointed by God as the custodian and the guardian of life. And in this she becomes a person. Does professional life harden a woman? No, there's nothing in professional life that would harden a woman. What would harden a woman in professional life? An inability to find an outlet for her specifically creative function. The helping of humanity, like women in missionaries, as missionaries. There was one nun in a leper colony, and some wealthy man on a tour passed on the outside of the leper colony, and the sister came out to see him, and he said, "Sister, I wouldn't do that for $1 million. And she said, "Neither would I." But she did it simply because she loved humanity, loved the poor. And hence, the women who do not utilize this great function that God has given them, this motherly spirit, then they become withered and dried up. Some years ago, I was traveling on a plane between New York and Chicago, and a stewardess sat down alongside of me just as soon as we took off, and she said, "Do you remember me?" "No." "Are you sure you don't remember me?" I said, "I ought to, because she was a very beautiful girl." I said, "I ought to, but I don't." She said, "You don't remember talking to me?" I said, "No." But she said, "2 years ago on this plane, I sat with you for 20 minutes. And I remember every word you said to me." "What did I say?" "Well, you began by saying, 'You are a very beautiful girl.' You see, celibacy doesn't blind us. Matter of fact, it may give us better eyesight. I don't know. But in any case, you began by saying you're a very beautiful girl, and then you added, 'Did you know? And of all the gifts that God gives, the one that he gives back last and least of all is the gift of beauty. He gives men money, they use it to help the poor of the world. He gives men the gift of song, and they sing for him, but when he gives the gift of beauty, generally he gets back nothing but whole bones. Now that you have the gift of beauty, why don't you think of using it for people who never see anything beautiful?' That's what you said." Well, I said, "That sounds exactly like me, and that's what I would say." She said, "I've had 2 years to think it over. Now I'm ready to do anything." "Anything else?" she said. "Anything." I said, "All right, you come to my office in 2 days in New York, and I will tell you." I said, "I will tell you now if you want to know." She said, "It makes no difference, because I've made up my mind." I said, "You're going to Vietnam to care for lepers." That's where she is, caring for lepers. And these poor people, whose own loveliness has been ruined, now are looking out on something beautiful. And so a woman through motherhood and through a true marriage and a woman through the service of humanity becomes not the modern woman, once our superior, now our equal, the real godlike woman whom we toast. First at the tomb on Easter morn and closest to the cross on Good Friday.
Our sincere thanks to the Fulton J. Sheen Company, who has given us permission to share these broadcasts with you today. I invite you to make Bishop Sheen a part of your family audio and video collection. You can call them toll-free at 1-866-357-4336 or visit the official website for purchasing Catholic Family videos and DVDs of Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen's recordings from the Catholic television series Life is Worth Living. The web address is www.bishopsheen.com. You will find rare collections of Catholic Family video recordings addressing a variety of topics such as morality, Mary the Mother of God, angels, Catholic holy days, and other faith-based subjects. So call toll-free today, 1-866-357-4336. Again, 1-866-357-4336. And on the web, www.bishopsheen.com. And on behalf of Bishop Sheen, God love you. Good Monday evening to you all. You're listening to FM 98.5 CKWR. I'm your host, Al Smith, and I want to thank you for joining me for these times of reflection, just reviewing these old, beautiful homilies and sermons and television shows from the venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. Many of us have great memories of this wise and holy man, and you know, I've traveled all over Canada and the United States speaking about Bishop Sheen, and I'm happy to call this area my home. And it is one of these things that I've just can tell you without a word of a lie that he did touch millions of souls. And the television ratings speak of that, 30 million people each week watching him on television. Of course, many people talking about the topics that he shared. This topic, women as objects, not persons, how that still rings true today in society, and how women are not given the dignity that they deserve. And again, it's sad. It's sad, but he brought it to the attention of the people. So you imagine 30 million people listening to that message, and what ripple effect it had for the weeks and weeks to come. And of course, with television, there's always the reruns, the repeats, and so that message was heard time and time again. And so we're glad to share it with you tonight. And, you know, if you want to listen to these talks, of course, we've been talking about, you know, the Catechism series, 50 Lessons, and talking about the retreats he gave. They're all available on the internet. I have a site that I set up about 5 years ago called BishopSheenToday.com. And there I tried to put as many of the YouTube videos of his television shows on there. I have, I think it's 43 downloadable Bishop Sheen books that are free. A lot of his stuff is public domain, so it's out there and it's archived. And so you want to read The World's First Love, you can find it on the internet for free. You want to read about the seven sacraments, there's a book there, also free. So, and then the talks, the catechisms, there's everything there. And so I encourage you to visit and spend a few hours. I mean, one thing about Bishop Sheen is he lifts up your day. He really does, you know. His smile, his candor, he is a great, I don't want to say performer, but he did perform. I mean, you had to have this knack and this gift to stand there on television and deliver the message and make it believable. And we truly do believe him when he says it. And so we're going to just now step back into the catechism classroom. I always like to say it's the school of Sheen. And he's going to be talking about the Mother of Jesus. And I think a lot of us just always need to know more about her. It seems that wherever Mary was, Jesus was. She was a very good mother. And of course, she has a role in salvation history. And so Bishop Sheen will kind of explain that a little bit more to us today. And so I encourage you now to sit back and relax and enjoy this lesson on Mary, the Mother of Jesus.
Peace be to you. Did you ever think that there should be a feminine principle in religion? Just suppose there was nothing about womanhood in religion. What a rightful protest we would hear. All religions have a feminine principle. I have on my desk a statue that was given to me by a former missionary in China. It is a statue of Kuan Yin. Kuan Yin, according to the Chinese legend, was a young princess who lived about 500 years before Christ. And she wanted to dedicate her virginity to God. And her father killed her. And according to the legend, a tiger dragged her into hell. And she began pleading mercy for all of the inmates of hell. So disrupted hell, so introduced charity, that the devil ordered her out of hell. So she became to the Chinese Kuan Yin, the goddess of mercy. Probably just an oriental yearning for some great woman in religion. Take the Muslims. Mohammed had a daughter whose name was Fatima. She died at a very early age. And Mohammed mourned her deeply. And he wrote concerning her, "Of all the women in heaven, she is the most blessed next to Mary." Did you know that the Quran of the Muslims has over 40 verses in it concerning our Blessed Mother? They believe in the Immaculate Conception. They believe in the virgin birth. Then there are African peoples who have a tradition that when a son succeeds to a throne, the inauguration ceremonies consist of sitting on the lap of his mother. In other words, he derives some authority from the maternal principle. Take, for example, the great Latin poet, Virgil. In his fourth Eclogue, which has been called a messianic poem, he has this line: "Smile, chaste woman, on thy infant boy, with whom the Iron Age will pass away, and the Golden Age on all the earth be born." And then going back to Homer, the great Greek poet who lived 1,000 years before Christ, he threw into history the story of a defeated man and a sorrowful woman. And the sorrowful woman, remember, while her husband Ulysses was away on voyage, she had many suitors. And she said to each of them, "Just as soon as I finish weaving this garment, I will consider your plea." And every night, she always undid the stitches that she put in during the day until her husband came back. No one could ever understand why this great poet should have made all history understand a defeated man and a sorrowful woman, until there came a defeated man and a sorrowful woman. Which brings us to the subject of the real feminine principle in religion. I believe that all love begins with a dream. I think every person has in his mind, in his heart, the image of the one he loves. It is made up of memories, thoughts, dreams, ideals, experiences. And then one day, someone appears. It's called love at first sight. It is not love at first sight. Is love at second sight. Every great love is a dream come true. Did you ever see a dream walking? Well, I did. And that is why love is very much like music. We hear music for the first time and we like it. Why? Because we've already got that music inside of our own hearts. Now, when God became man, or when he willed it from the very creation of the world, he had a dream about a mother. The woman who would be his mother when he would take on flesh would decide the time of his birth, the circumstances, the people, and all of the details. He thought of her long, long before she was born. She was the dream come true. The world's first love. Just suppose you could have made your own mother. Would you not have made her the most beautiful, kind woman in all the world? Well, God could make his own mother. God could make his own mother in somewhat the same way that artists can create. I suppose one of the most famous of all the mother paintings is Whistler's. When someone complimented Whistler about his painting, he said, well, you know how it is. One tries to make one's mummy just as good as one can. So Almighty God, who pre-existed his own mother, made her just as beautiful as God could. That is why she was immaculately conceived. Now, what does immaculate conception mean? It means simply that she was conceived without the stain of original sin. One thing I cannot understand is why people today disbelieve in the immaculate conception. Because most people today believe they are without sin. Therefore, they are all immaculately conceived. The Immaculate Conception does not mean that our Blessed Lady did not need to be redeemed like you and I did. It merely meant that from the moment of her conception, she was immune from the stain of sin. And was not this fitting? If you have a distinguished visitor announced at your home, do you not sweep the front hall? Well, if God is going to enter this world, do you not think that he should come into portals that were rather clean? Look at all the trouble that God went to make a paradise for man. just in order to celebrate the first nuptials of man and woman. Well, here's a new paradise. Not the paradise of creation, but the paradise of the incarnation. And should he not, therefore, make this garden much more beautiful? Should it not be a garden in which there would not grow a single weed of sin? Over whose portals the name of evil could never be written? And this paradise of the incarnation to be gardenered by the Adam new was our Blessed Lady, the feminine principle in religion. When the time therefore came, God sent out an angel from the great white throne of light. The angel descended down over the plains of Esdras and came to a humble virgin kneeling in prayer and said, "Hail, full of grace," which means, "The Lord loves you." And asked that chosen woman if she would give to God human nature. And she said, "Be it done to me according to thy will." In Latin, it is fiat. Be it done. There are three great fiats in the world. Fiat lux, let there be light of creation. Fiat voluntas tua, suffering on the cross. Fiat mihi secundum verbum tuum, be it done to me according to thy word, the Annunciation. When Mary, in the name of us all, said, "I allow you to come in to this world. I will be your Eden. I will give you a human nature." And so God took upon himself in this cloistered garden a new nature. And from this woman, Christ is born. I need hardly tell you that there's no such thing as adoration of Mary. We have not made Mary important. It is our Lord that made her important. And then notice how he changed her role in relationship to us. Here we go to the marriage feast of Cana. This was at the beginning of the public life. Now at the marriage feast of Cana, our blessed Lord came and brought along with him from the Jordan all of his disciples. That is why I think the wine gave out. There were so many gate crashers. You just can't imagine a wedding ceremony in a wine country without providing enough wine. But in any case, the wine gave out. Now, who's the first one to notice it? The Blessed Mother. She knows our needs very often before we do. And she said the simple prayer, "They have no wine." Now he gave a strange answer. He said, "Woman, what is that to me?" Or, more in the original Greek, "What is mine is thine. My hour has not yet come." Let us analyze this. My hour has not yet come. Whenever our blessed Lord used the word hour, he always used it in relationship to his passion and his death. Always. For example, when they attempted to stone him on two or three occasions, the gospel said his hour was not yet come. When Judas came down in the garden to betray him, our Lord says, "This is your hour. Your hour, the hour of evil." The night of the Last Supper, "Father, the hour has come." So our Lord is saying to his mother, "The hour of my passion and death has not yet come. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to work my first miracle? Do you want me to prove that I am the expected Messiah, Christ the Son of the living God?" You realize that if I work this miracle and announce myself as the Christ and the Son of God, that I will be sent to the cross? Do you want to be a mother that is sending your son to the battlefield? My dear mother, if that is what you intend to do, if you want me to begin now my public life and to usher in my death, my passion, my redemption of men, then your relation to me will change. Up to this point, in our private home life, you have been known as the mother of Jesus. But the moment that I begin my redemptive work, you will not just be my mother. You will be the mother of everyone whom I will redeem. Then you will be not just the mother of Jesus. Then you will be the mother of all humanity. And I salute you. I call you now woman, the universal mother. Three years pass. We come to the cross. In the middle of those 3 years, one day, the Blessed Mother, worried about his long night prayers and his all-day preaching, was waiting in the crowd, and someone said, "Your mother waits." And our Blessed Lord said, "Who is my mother?" And then he said, "Relationship is not of blood." In the new order, relationship is of the Spirit. "He that doth the will of my Father in heaven is my mother, my father, my brother, my sister." Now we come to the cross. Our Lord looks down from the cross upon the two most precious creatures that he has on this earth, John and his mother. And he speaks first of all to his mother. He does not call her mother. This is redemption. The hour has come. He says, "Woman, woman." Then, as much as a crowned head could gesture, indicating John, he adds, "This is your son." He did not call John John, because if he called him John, he would have been just the son of Zebedee. But leaving him unnamed, in his anonymity, John stood for all humanity. So our Blessed Mother is now made the mother of all humanity, and not in virtue of a metaphor or a figure of speech, but in virtue of the veritable pangs of childbirth. Was she to have other children? Yes, but not according to the flesh, of the Spirit. John was the first of that long line, which we are at it, millions and millions of sons and daughters. And he said to John, "This is your mother." That's why we love Our Lady. our blessed Lord made her our mother. The feminine principle in religion. And there is no such thing as doing her on or in a way to make us forget our Lord. Suppose I visited your home. When I went into your home, I refused to talk to your mother. What would you think? You would not entertain me very long, would you? Well, do you think our blessed Lord is going to think very kindly of us? If we pay no attention to her? And we ask her to intercede for us. Because sometimes when we want a favor, we go to the mother of the one from whom we want the favor. She has some very special powers of intercession. We say the rosary. Yes, a repetition of Our Father and Hail Mary. That it merely means. When we love anyone, we keep saying over and over again, I love you. Why do we say over and over again, I love you? Well, because it's a new moment of time. It's a new location in space. And so in the rosary, we keep saying the Our Father and Hail Mary. It's a way of telling her, I love you, I love you, I love you. And her intercession is tremendous. One day it seems that our blessed Lord was walking through the courts of heaven, and he saw some souls that apparently got into heaven very easily. And he went to Peter. He said, Peter, I have given to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. How did these souls gain entry into my kingdom? Peter said, don't blame me, Lord. Every time I close a door, your mother opens a window. And that's the way perhaps some of us will get in, the open window. George Bernard Shaw said shortly before he died, I think maybe his mother will let me in. So we are her children. And as her children, we never grow up. And we say to her, in the lovely language of Mary Dixon Thayer, lovely lady dressed in blue, teach me how to pray. God was just your little boy. Tell me what to say. Did you lift him up sometime, gently on your knee? Did you sing to him the way mother does to me? Did you ever try telling him stories of the world? And, oh, did he cry? Do you think he cares if I tell him things? Just little things that happen. And do angels' wings make a noise? Can he hear me if I speak low? Does he understand me now? Tell me, for you know. Lovely lady dressed in blue, teach me how to pray. God was just your little boy, and you know the way. God love you.
Good Monday evening to you all. You're listening to FM 98.5 CKWR. I'm your host, Al Smith, and I want to thank you for joining us to listen to this beautiful reflection on Mary, the mother of Jesus. Bishop Sheen recited that famous poem that was his favorite poem about Our Lady, lovely lady dressed in blue. And I think it brings a tear to some people's eyes when they hear him say it with such love and affection. But it is a very powerful prayer and a very powerful poem. And many times poems are prayers. It's amazing. But again, my thanks to my good friend Anthony, who remastered that old crackly talk. It was on vinyl. And of course, you know, the snap, crackle, and pop that you hear with old records. Cleaned it up beautifully. It sounded amazing. And he has a full Bishop Sheen collection available on the web at his website, fultonsheen.com. And there for pennies, you can purchase these audio recordings that you can have on your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone, your iPad, all your electronic devices. And so again, www.fultonsheen.com. I want to thank you for supporting our station. We are a listener-supported station, and we've been in existence for 40 years now. And by the grace of God, through the generosity of yourselves, the listeners, and our sponsors, we've been able to share this message with you today. And so I encourage you to give generously. Our mailing address is 1446 King Street East in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Our postal code is N2G2N7. And if you'd like, you could call us through the week, regular business hours, at 1-800-757-1050 or area code 519-886-9870. And we have our website, FM 98.5. It is just simply www.ckwr.com. And there we have a secure site for donations. And if you missed all that, you can always listen to me on a repeat broadcast. You'll find me as the Pipe Padre on SoundCloud and MixCloud. So just Google the Pipe Padre and you'll find me. or Al Smith the Gas Man, as I'm known here locally. But again, we can always appreciate, of course, your charity towards us and this fine apostolate. And so until next week, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you kindly and bring you peace.